Hey everybody, stay tuned today where I'm talking to Brian and Daniel about the financial considerations when you're looking at your cloud adoption strategy and building your business case for moving to Azure. Welcome to the Azure Enablement Show. In this show, we're having technical conversations with Microsoft experts to try and address some of the common questions or concerns you might have with your cloud adoption journey. Now, in previous episodes, we talked about the cloud adoption framework and what it was and how it can actually accelerate your cloud adoption journey. In today's episode, we're focusing on cloud economics and some of the key considerations you have to think about when you're migrating to the cloud. Specifically, we're talking about the financial considerations around optimizing your cost structures and building that business case. And joining me today, I have Brian, who is Senior Director of the Cloud Adoption Framework, and I also have Daniel, who is Group Finance Manager here at Microsoft. So welcome both to the show. My first question is for Brian. Brian, can you tell me a bit about all the business outcomes when thinking about the financial considerations?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about any kind of corporate strategy for digital transformation, it's always wise to start with the business outcomes that you have in mind. You can do a lot of things with the cloud, and depending on what you want to do, you may get totally different results. So if your outcomes are things like fiscal outcomes of saving cost or just streamlining cost in general, you want to behave a little bit differently. If you're more focused on agility outcomes, like you want to be able to deploy more quickly or move into a new geographic region more quickly, that's a totally different kind of outcome. And maybe cost isn't as important as maybe speed and the ability to move fast. Or if your outcomes are more centered around customers and customer engagements, you may be getting into more new innovation that has a really high upfront experimental cost as you're learning new things and figuring things out, but then slows down a little bit as you get closer to production and with kind of a ramp over time. So depending on what you want to do, there's different outcomes that will impact how you look at your financials.
So from what I'm getting there, moving to the cloud or moving to Azure kind of affects some of your financial considerations. Is that right, Brian?
Oh, heavily. Yeah, it impacts them quite a bit. Again, the motivations determine how you want to look at your finances. If your objective is to use a pay-as-you-go model and do a little bit of experimentation and kind of grow over time, you have a lot more control than you would in a traditional world where you buy a whole bunch of equipment up front before you ever start development. So just that shift from upfront purchasing to only paying for what you use really changes things and lets you move towards those business outcomes a little bit more fluidly.
So what are some of those financial considerations people should really be thinking about? What at a high level should they actually talk about within their design meetings and stuff like that, Brian?
So Daniel's definitely more of the expert on this one than I am. But when you're thinking about financials and talking to a customer, it's really important to understand how your financial organization works and be able to speak in a language that your CFO or your controllers can understand. And we've got a lot of guidance on the terminology that financial people use when you look at the cloud adoption framework strategy methodology. But you'll hear a lot of terms like EBITDA or KPIs or depreciation or amortization. And some of them sound a little bit scary. Things like EBITDA is a really big acronym. So for IT, that should be easy for us. It stands for earnings before interest, taxes, and appreciation. But really at the end of the day, it's how much money are you going to make on this thing? And that's really what all this equates down to, is understanding what's the return, you know, how much am I going to get back from my investment, and what's the cash flow look like? So am I going to see that now, or am I going to see that a few years from now? And I'm sure Daniel will go a lot deeper in those topics, but that's generally how we look at it, is understanding those terms so you can have that rich conversation.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. Since I hear Daniel is such an expert, I'd like to welcome him into the conversation. And Daniel, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. Could you tell me a bit about these financial considerations that Brian's introduced to us, please?
Yeah, thank you. I think one of the key things that I like to frame up when we're having this cloud economics conversation is that, you know, when you're shifting from an on-prem environment to a cloud environment, you're not just having a digital transformation. You're also having financial transformations that are occurring. And so, as Brian alluded to, there are things related to your financial position, related to accounting KPI and even processes that are going to shift when you go from an on-premise environment to a cloud-based environment. And so cloud economics is bigger than just that, right? It's, you know, when you shift to a cloud environment, you get elasticity. You move away from fixed cost. you're moving to more variable models. But especially for some of our finance counterparts, you know, the CFO, the controller of an organization, they manage the processes and budgets. And so there are shifts that are going to happen they want to understand. And so one of those core shifts is what we'd call the CapEx to OpEx transformation. Now, we can't give accounting guidance. We can't give accounting policy. It really is up to your own organizations to identify that shift from CapEx to OpEx. But all that effectively means is that when you're on-premise, you tend to buy things via capital acquisition. So you buy a physical server. You take that server, you put it in your data center, and you'll depreciate it over a number of years. When you move to a more cloud-based model, you're no longer spending upfront. You're spending over time in a pay-as-you-go or even reserved instance model that still retains a degree of flexibility. And so you tend to see a shift from a CapEx model to an OpEx model. And so our CFOs, our controllers, keep budgets. They keep budgets for things like capital. They keep budgets for things like operating expenses. And so when you move from that on-prem model to a cloud model, they need to forecast, they need to budget and predict what their spend categories will kind of shift over time. When we think about a KPI, you know, Brian alluded to EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. It's a mouthful. Really, the way I like to talk about it, it's effectively what we call operating income, so your profitability of your business, but you get to add back depreciation and amortization. And so when you go from an on-premise model where you have depreciation and amortization tied to your CapEx and you add it back and you move to a cloud-based model where you no longer get to add that cost back, your KPI will shift, right? You'll typically see a lower EBITDA because you're not getting to add that cost back. You're not adding back the depreciation and amortization. Now, I always joke, you know, servers don't grow on trees. They're not free as much as we'd like them to be. And so the reality, what you want to focus on is understand how your EBITDA KPI will change, but focus on the core benefit the cloud can provide, which is really tied to cash flow. The timing of when you're spending cash flow can be improved in the cloud because you're not spending upfront anymore. You're spending over time as you need it. And so all of those shifts are really critical, and you really want to consider, you know, how it impacts the CFO, how it impacts the financial audience, because again, it's not just digital transformation. It is a financial one as well, and one that they need to be prepared for.
Awesome. That's super helpful, Daniel. In terms of thinking about a business case that an organization may have to build in order to move to the cloud, how can they leverage these financial considerations and some of the points you talked about to build that business case? Have you got any tips or best practices you could share with them?
Yeah, when I'm thinking about a business case, I always want to first frame on what is the exact scope of what we're thinking about? What is the scope of transformation we're looking at? Because the reality is our financial records and our technical records often don't talk directly to one another. And so when we're building out a business case, we want to do our best to make sure any analysis is apples to apples. And so my first focus is going to be to build out effectively a baseline cost to run an environment in an on-premise scenario. So I want to understand what is the scope of work. Maybe it's my x86 environment. Maybe it's SAP or any other application that you have on-premise. You want to consider what does that cost to run today across not just your server costs, right? Your depreciation tied to CapEx, but things like your lease expenditures, maybe bandwidth costs, or really any other costs related to running that application. Then what you want to do when you're building out your business case is think about how those costs can transition over time. One of the core benefits of building a business case is to identify key dependencies on when you need to change things about your environment. Maybe in a year, 2 years, you have a data center lease that comes up for renewal. If you're not planning your transition, if you're not building a business case to understand when that dependency hits, it can be very difficult to actually execute a migration. And so you're going to project out how the on-premise costs change over time. And then finally, you're going to layer on the cost to run the new environment. What is that migration timeline and the Azure spend, the cost of the new environment that you have? And it's really critical to think about how to optimize that environment and how to not just transition it from on-prem to cloud exactly the same way, but to think about optimization opportunities where you can do the same work, but with less resources. Maybe you're provisioning for averages instead of peaks, or you're shifting how you're actually, you know, acquiring your capacity when you go from that on-prem model to your cloud-based model.
Awesome. Those are some great points, Daniel. You mentioned projecting costs both on your on-prem and your Azure environments. how can an organization properly actually build those projections and make them realistic, Daniel?
Yeah, one of the core things I always say is consider kind of cloud-based billing models. Do not always just go for the pay-as-you-go price. You want to consider how you can identify the workload you're running, identify the best billing model, the best product offering, and then any other benefits we have. So there's a few that I really always highlight to customers because it can be absolutely critical to reducing costs. One is Azure Hybrid Benefit. So our ability to provide license portability can mean you don't need to spend on, let's say, a Windows or a SQL Server license that you already have on-premise in a cloud-based model. And so you can use some of those on-premise licenses you already have, and that can reduce your Azure price point. You also want to think about Azure reservations, right? How can I utilize 1 or 3 year reservations to reduce my price point? For the 3 year reservation, you can really have anywhere from a 50 to a 70% reduction relative to the pay as you go price. So it's a significant discount, but you retain flexibility. And importantly, you still pay over time. You don't need to pay upfront for a reservation, and you can actually change family or region if your workload demands change. So we retain a significant amount of flexibility even in that reserved capacity bucket. So really important to reducing your costs and providing an optimized spend category. I would also say when you're thinking about more high level architectural longer term changes, think about how you might change architectures either to past services or simply to use things like spot instance pricing, which can allow you to achieve lower price points, but requires some understanding and some flexibility in how you're using that capacity. So all of those things, both from the product offering point of view, as well as from architectural decisions you can make, can really drastically impact the cost to run an environment. And so when you're transitioning, think about what the low-hanging fruits are, how to achieve those, and then plan for over time how to more directly address some of the longer-term opportunities you may have.
Awesome. Now, thinking about after the migration, Daniel, there'll probably be lots of changes for an organization. They'll be adding new solutions or resizing workloads once they figure out the right size for it being in Azure. Have you got any tips for our customers on how they deal with that ever-changing kind of environment and how to deal with this new cost optimization model?
Yeah, I think like one of the things I always lay out is it's not just about a once and done exercise with a business case. You really have to continuously cost optimize, and you have to implement that business case over time. And so first, yes, you're absolutely going to have an initial pass where you go in and you right size, you'll optimize, you'll change things up. You'll see, what's not using the resources you've provisioned. But importantly, you also need to continuously do that. You need to look at those workloads over time as things change and as people spin up new resources. You want to make sure you're setting up Azure policies to ensure you can kind of control spend where you need to control spend. You want to make sure you're looking at recommendations and some of our cost management tools to see how costs are being used by different groupings. You want to make sure that you're using resource tagging to really, ensure you have direct accountability for spend, because all of these things are kind of more easily enabled in the cloud. Also importantly is not just your Azure, cost management and control, but also how are you thinking about some of the retained pieces or the on-premise spend? I've seen shifts happen where customers continue to buy servers on-premise. Someone will go and buy a server even though the workload was going to migrate. And as soon as they buy that server, that's 5 years of spend that now exists in your on-premise environment. So you also need to make sure you're constraining some of your on-premise asset acquisition, and you're really tactically planning your move. You're not just kind of looking once and then, saying, okay, great, we're moved to the cloud. You have to look both on-premise and in the cloud to ensure you're really, optimized and you're running a refined and a cost-efficient environment.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Daniel. I have one last question. I'd like to bring Brian in to answer this one for me. Brian, where can our customers and our viewers get started with everything that we've talked about today? Where's the best place for them to head to?
So there's a couple of great places for that. The first one is in the Cloud Adoption Framework. We have a strategy methodology, which breaks out a couple of key steps to build out your strategy. Financial and technical considerations associated with cloud economics are front and center there as a critical step to developing your strategy. Or you can also go straight to the cloud economics website on azure.com. Links for both are listed below to make it easier for people to get there.
Awesome. Thank you both for your time today. It's been super insightful for me. Thank you to everybody that's tuned in. As Brian said, we'll be posting links in the description box below, so please do check that out and stay tuned for future episodes of the Azure Enablement Show.